everybody. Welcome to Slip Angle. It's day five of the One Lap of America coverage. It's 11 a.m. on the East Coast, and I'm joined by owner slash, I don't know, crazy builder thinker of the Super K S2000, which has been on the show before. This is Alex Moss, but the Super K is now a turbocharged K24 BMW DCT trans swapped time attack car, street modified class winner slash One Lap of America competitor. And it's been a crazy week for you guys. Tell me how things are going today.
Is it, well, first thing, is it really day five already?
Yeah,
it's flying by. But yeah, it's going well for us. We haven't been able to talk, mostly because this car is stall out. Like when we tried to talk, I couldn't hear anything you were saying. So we have to work around the schedule a little bit and work around the downtime here. So far, so good.
Especially in this case, it's funny because you're at the racetrack, but I too am at the racetrack. I'm up at Gingerman today, and at the moment, I'm sitting in Adam's RV recording a podcast with you. So, I didn't want to break my streak of Slip Angle releases for one lap coverage, so I brought all of my stuff. I don't travel light, but I hope things are going well. I hope things are going well today. I haven't seen any times posted from this morning yet.
Yeah, it's going well today. Track has been damp to this point. I'm not sure we'd call it a wet track, but certainly not a dry track. Andy drove this morning. We believe he is going to be in P2 when things shake out.
Behind Tom?
So, yeah, of course, behind the new guy, which is unfortunate. But there we go.
Well, I suppose that it helps that he's like one of you guys too. So, not that losing is ever easy, but you know, it might as well be a friend of yours.
Right. So the podium, as it sits right now, is Tom in first place, Andy and I in second, and then Shaky Dog. So Chris Lewis and Robert Thorne in third. And as we look at it, you know, in all the possible podiums, it's not so bad. Obviously, we'd like to see the TTRS up there with us. But of all the possible combinations, those are all very, very good friends.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everybody's good friends on one lap, but those are all extra good friends.
Yeah. So I heard a story that you had some theatrics in Dallas, somehow downtown. Tell me that story.
Okay, so everything's going well. Let me start from the start. So we've got this DCT transmission that's been in. It's the second transmission that's been in our car. We have not had one of these trans really truly survive a lap yet. So very untested. We got through South Bend to Memphis to Dallas with no issues. Everything was kind of smooth sailing. And then leaving the track at Dallas, we had no forward drive. It would go into gear, but the car just would not move forward. So about 45 minutes of diagnosing, we diagnosed it to a failed factory Honda brake switch. The switch that makes the brake lights turn on and off. That was essentially making the GCU think we were on the brakes all the time, which would stop it from going into what's called take-up mode.
Right, which is like the soft take-off.
Stop moving. Yeah, exactly. So we just hold the clutches open all the time. So got that repaired and then headed off downtown or to go to New Orleans. Where we were going after that. The rumor or the advice we got was if you get through Dallas before 4, you're going to be fine with traffic. Otherwise, you want to go around. Well, this diagnosis stuff took us. So we were sent down when there was traffic, which meant the GPS took us off the freeway and actually down onto surface streets in Dallas.
That's probably never what you want in a car like that.
Not exactly. So we're going through downtown Dallas, and it's like 95 degrees out. Well, we're in the middle lane of like five lanes. We get to a traffic light, and he goes to take off, and the car stalls, which happens every once in a while. But then our keypad is 100% unresponsive, and we can't get the car restarted. Like can't even fire the starter motor on it. So we're blocking traffic. All the Dallas drivers are...
They're very angry and waving their guns at you.
Yeah, everybody's showing support by waving their guns at us. So eventually we get it restarted, move on to the next light. It does the same thing again. So then we're stuck another 5-10 minutes, get it restarted, and we pull into like this art museum drop off loading zone to try and work on the PDM, reconfigure the PDM so that we can start it with steering wheel buttons rather than the CAN bus keypad. Sorry, I'm kind of out of breath as we're trying to pack everything up here. So we are reconfiguring everything and getting yelled at by security that you can't park here. We're like, we don't want to be parked here. Believe me, we want to go. Get it all reconfigured, get back on the road, and now we're just stuck in traffic. Car's overheating, so we've got to run the heater in the car. It's 95 degrees out. That was miserable. But... that's been the extent of our problem so far.
So did you figure out why the keypad was unresponsive?
We think the PDM overheated. We think it's heat-related. The only explanation that makes any sense is that the PDM overheated, and so it wasn't communicated properly on CAN.
Interesting.
So that's the only thing that makes some sense, but it doesn't make total sense.
Expect the electronics in the PDM to be like automotive grade, which should mean that they would operate at temperatures that an automobile might see.
Yeah, it was really hot. So where the PDM is kind of where the heater box is, which is where all the heat from the engine bay kind of vents into the cabin. So it got really hot in there when we were on track. And you know, in the 95 degree heat and what have you.
Gotcha.
So that's kind of our best theory.
So I want to learn more about the chicken feed or whatever it was that ended up in your car on the transit.
Yeah. So we're late at night. We're driving through Louisiana, into like this large parts of Louisiana where there's just literally nothing. We've got to have gone 20, 30 miles without seeing even an exit. And all of a sudden, we got to run windows down all the time, otherwise it's unbearably hot. All of a sudden, we're starting to get pelted with this grassy stuff. And there's just like clouds of it hanging in the air.
I got it.
And as we drive through it, fills the cabin, we get it all in our eyes and get hit in the face. Stop for gas, and some other one lappers are there, and they say, "Oh, I work in the industry. This is like cattle feed or chicken feed. It's cracked corn or something like that." So when we got back on the freeway, it wasn't happening anymore. So we must have been following a truck with this stuff for like 50 miles of it shedding its load. And then when we stopped, we finally got out of it. But then after, so the car was just covered. Everything was covered in this stuff.
Fortunately for us, we had a passenger control yesterday
at Tommy's Express Car Wash. And they gave us free vacuums. So we vacuumed all the interior of the car, and it's kind of good as new now.
Well, that's convenient.
So it was super convenient.
So
the passage control, we have another passage control today at a rod shop.
A what?
And I'm kind of hoping that doesn't turn out to be also convenient. A rod shop, custom rod shop.
Like connecting rods? Connecting rods. Yeah, I hope that you don't need that.
Yes.
But you might, right, if you followed my advice, which is if you want to start closing the gap on Tom, I think you got to turn it up.
Well, we'll see. We'll see where we're at. We've got two more track events. One of them is Gingerman. There is a nasty rumor going around that in testing, Tom ran right around what our goal lap time is for Super K in the end. So if that ends up being true, he's probably going to be out of touch.
I cannot confirm nor deny the lap that he ran.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll see where he is.
But
he's talking to me now, and I can't quite hear what he's saying, but I think it's like, if you don't beat Tom, you're fired.
Well, I thought he worked for you.
No, I kind of work for him.
I don't know
how it works. Nobody knows what the arrangement is.
So if you compare your experience this year as the car is currently set up, how is it different from years prior? Like, just in terms of the drive and the transits and things like that, how livable is it compared to last year and the year before?
So we only did this in 2019. Obviously, there was no one lap.
Oh, that's right.
The car overall is less comfortable and less livable than it was then. We have only heat now all the time, and it's just whether you want a little bit of heat or all the heat. And the days are a lot hotter this time around than they were last time when we were packing blankets because we had no heat.
Right.
But the car is quieter this time around than it was last time.
Which is hard to believe, because when I did call you for about 60 seconds, you said that you could barely hear me, and I could almost certainly not hear you. So it's pretty loud in there.
It's pretty loud, but it's as quiet as it was.
So what about with all the aero, has transit driving been difficult? I think you've had some encounters with turtle shells.
Yeah, so we, Andy and I, also go and do some endurance racing with the Shaky Dog team. And if anybody knows Shaky Dog team, they know that as Robert Thorne and Chris Lewis. That's not entirely true. They are just hired guns for the Shaky Dog team, who are all on borrowed time. Tina Lewis, Chris's wife, is the real boss, and she has the ability to hire and fire anybody she wants. Anyway, she's supposedly has this history of picking who's going to win one lap, including picking Brennan and Micaiah the year they won it.
Interesting.
Well, she picked us to win in 2020, which didn't happen. So presumably that carries over.
Well, she didn't really pick us. She picked Andy to win. Well, after about 2 days, maybe, I think it was day one or day two, she texted Annie and said, "Sorry, Andy, I don't pick you anymore. I've got to go with Chris and Thorn." So we think that she's out there basically throwing turtle shells at us because those guys are chasing us, and she wants to, you know, the Mario Kart green shells.
Oh yeah,
because she's hit us 3 times now in these transits.
Has all of the hardware been okay? Like, or are things damaged?
No, it's mostly okay. I mean, little trans temp sensor that got bent up a little bit from one of them that went under. Car smells of turtle soup. And the splitter has taken some damage. Not sure. I don't think that was from turtles. I think that was from previous offs and things like that. This is our old splitter. It's not sacrificial. Like, we're trying to tear it up, but we know it could get torn up on the strip, so we're running the old one, not the new one.
I wonder, you guys probably aren't paying attention, but with all the aero that you have configured on the car, how do you think that affects the highway range on the car?
I mean, we're pulling a 1,500-pound trailer. I think that probably has more to do with it than the aero.
1,500 pounds?
That's kind of what we've got
full Milwaukee pack-out kit here. We carry 10, 24, 27 gallons of fuel, spare wheel and tire, the entire Milwaukee M12 and M18 range of tools, socket sets, torque wrenches, jack stands, jack,
What about spare parts?
Not too many spare parts. We've got a clutch cover. We didn't bring a whole trans, just a clutch cover, which was the thing we broke at Barber. So we have that. And probably a few things here and there, brake pads.
If you didn't bring a whole bunch of spares, what on earth do you need all those tools for?
Well, spares we can find.
I suppose.
Time fixing stuff. I mean, we've got spare turbo here. We've got a spare alternator. We have spares.
Just nothing. Nothing like, big. No engines. No trans.
No engines. No trans. Nothing like that.
And I assume that you probably don't need a spare diff because the 488 is sturdy.
Hopefully. Well, I mean, it's all hopefully, right?
Well, it seems like it's working okay right
you
now.
You don't need it until you hit a turtle and break it.
That's awful.
She needs to start sending some red shells after us rather than these green shells.
Well, or maybe throwing some shells at Tom.
Yeah. She won't throw shells at Tom. Everybody loves Tom.
That's true.
She probably doesn't even know who Tom is yet and still loves Tom.
Yeah, probably. Well, I will let you get back to packing.
Tom's sitting there just smiling.
I'll let you get back to packing. It's been great having you on the show, and I hope that we get to check in with you again, and then we can talk more about your podium finish with Super K.
That would be amazing. That's looking a long way ahead yet. Halfway there, but still only halfway there.
Yep.
We've done over 2,000 miles on this trans. It's actually funny. We pulled through Birmingham last night and picked up the 85 and met Zach there and drove right by the exit for Barber, which, as you know, we go to Barber every year to test. And it just kind of dawned on me that essentially what we've done is driven the car to Barber. Like if we went to a track day at Barber and said, yeah, let's just drive Super K down there rather than towing it.
How bizarre is that?
But that's essentially what we've done.
Well, I mean...
Yeah, it was weird. It just kind of dawned on me.
Kudos for having a setup that can make it this far.
Well, that's okay. That's from having an Andy. It sounds like we got
to
go.
All right. So, talk to you later, buddy.
Thanks. Bye.
Take a bite.
Hey, man.
What's going on?
We're at
Taco track day.
Whew, taco test day for me. This thing is my car's fighting me.
You got a smoky turd out there,
but it's freaking fast. Feels real good in a straight line. I'm real stoked about that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, feels real good. But I'm fighting. So I put this fancy new oil pan on, and I'm fighting like. At Coda, I was fighting starving left-handers. It was, I only did like a lap or two, and it was lean, but the starve was the biggest problem. And I put this pimp pan on. It doesn't have trap doors, but it's a full baffle around the sump pickup, you know?
Okay.
So it should be like fine. Other road racers use the pan, and it's not fine. It's like fine for the first lap. Warm-up lap, it's fine. You push as hard as you want. And the harder I beat the car, the more it starts starving. And then I figured something out. So me and Mikey were playing with the tune a little bit because the temperature's a little different now than it was when I dynoed it. And I feel like, man, I've been in the sun too long today. But face is hot. I figured something out last session. I was getting after it with the car. And the new 510s, by the way, are
sick.
Dude, they're so good. Like it's stupid. The whiteners were really good. The 510s are really, really good. Like, they're really good. I'm really stoked about it. I like the new spring rates. They're a little bit stiffer than the whiteners. But it started getting to the point where really hard braking, I could see a little bit of oil starve. Right-handers and left-handers, I could see a little bit of oil starve. The previous was just left-handers because that's where it would go away from the sump and the oil pan,
sure.
Oil pickup because it's on the driver's side of the motor. So it got me like baffled. Like it's got a 6-quart pan now with a full baffle, and I'm like literally baffled. So I'm confused. And then I'm talking to Mikey, and we're playing with air fuels a little bit because I want to at least get that dialed, right? And then I'm like, why is it put the harder I go, the more it's pushing oil also. And then it's in braking and in right-handers also, and it's like, I'll bet all the oil's trapped up in the head. Because it's a hybrid motor, and back 12 years ago when I built it, I had no idea that I needed to look at, and I was drag racing it, you know, doing 12-second runs, right? I had no idea I needed to look at the oil drain back passages.
Sure.
And I bet they don't match up.
Probably.
Like, they match up a little.
Not enough.
But maybe not enough. And I'm also thinking maybe it doesn't have the restrictor to the head that it needs.
So that you're getting too much oil up there.
So I'm getting too much oil up there. Things like great oil pressure, and it's keeping oil clean. It's not dropping to zero. It gets to like 25. So I know it's like it's aerating the oil. It's sucking part air, but not all air.
Sure.
Dude, it's like I'm really sold on the power plant. I'm really sold on like the power band. Like I love it. I gotta finish it. You know, and I gotta get all the way through the development process of this motor. So I think before Blackhawk. Or like this week, I have my next motor on the stand, and I can compare the oil passages so I can know if they're lined up. And maybe they're just straight up inadequate because maybe I'm doubling the oil pressure into the head that I need to.
How will you be able to know how much oil you need versus how much you're getting?
I don't know. I don't remember. See, the Hondas on the main head oil feed typically have a restrictor, and I don't know if I have a restrictor in there. I have no idea. Because I built it 12 years ago, and it's just junkyard parts. I don't know if I have that. And I'm also thinking that one thing I could do without pulling the whole thing apart, because I really, before I put a new motor in or, like, do major invasiveness in this motor, I want to figure out the oil solution, like the slosh. Maybe before Blackhawk, I drill and tap the head in the front corners and do a full external drain back straight to the pan.
Okay.
The pan's got a NPT port front and back that I can do that with. So, like, I wouldn't even have to pull the pan off. So I think that's my next solution is just try to get oil out of the head. I'm thinking maybe I pull the head before Blackhawk also and see if it's got a restrictor in it.
Uh-huh.
I have another head gasket on the shelf, so I could put it right back together and then just buy another head gasket for the next motor. But, dude, in a straight line, it's a freaking ripper, dude. Like, it's so much faster than any other engine I've ever had in this car or in my CRX, like a straight line. It's totally got 38s, 39s in it. If I can drive it on good tires, it's so fast in a straight line and it handles so well.
Well, that, I guess that surprises me because it was supercharged last year,
right,
and it should have been plenty fast.
Well, it ran like 42s on like AR1s. You know, it was close, but the power band wasn't that great. It was like meaty, but it fell on its face up top.
Got it.
Like it wasn't that. Dude, this thing rips out of corners because it's got 50 more foot pounds than it did with the supercharger.
Yeah.
So, and it's got 70 more foot pounds than it did NA, the D15. So, with a similar horsepower level, it's 180 foot pounds. Freaking screams out of the corner. Like it's a good power band. So encouraging at least.
You know. This is day 5 of one lap coverage.
Right.
Over the lunch hour, I called Alex Moss.
Right.
And. At the time, things were running great for them, and he was marveling that with the amount of miles that he's driven that
right.
car at this event so far, it will have effectively been driving Super K from where he lives to Barber, mm-hmm. which, like, it took him a second last night thinking about it. That's, like, mind-blowing.
That's a lot. I heard that the second sessions at AMP got canceled for sound.
That's what he was saying this morning. He was unsure if that was true or not.
Robbie Vierhout, in another chat that I'm in, I saw he said that that they booted him. So,
well, that's
because so many cars broke sound.
That's not a surprising problem. Like I don't know how that wasn't dealt with prior.
Right. Well, cars didn't know how loud they were until they get there. But
they're all like all the cars at the front are 500, 600, 700 horsepower. They're all loud.
Yeah, and they. Even with factory mufflers, they're going to be real loud.
A GT2 RS is a loud car.
Right. I hope everybody at least got their laps in, you know. Like, it didn't disrupt
the competition. So, I did look. The scores from this morning, Tom was in first again, and Super K was again in second.
Mm-hmm.
And I, when I was talking with him on the show a little bit, that car, everything on it is dialed. Right. I mean, the grip is dialed, the aero's dialed, it, like things seem to be working.
Right.
The only way to close the gap to Tom even a little is to turn up the power. That's it.
Yeah. And, or to have Tom brake on accident.
Yeah. And yeah. and right now they are,
which you never wish on anybody,
in the in their turbo setup currently, I think they're like 425
yeah.
wheel,
yeah.
which that stock K-Series motor can make more, but it's at the expense of reliability always.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, I mean, it's time bomb anytime.
Yep.
It could blow up anytime.
So they may, I mean, they may take the conservative route and just hope for second,
mm-hmm.
Because the gap is 105 points now.
What about P2 to P3? They were real close the other day.
Let me look.
Did you get a chance to talk to Scott and Becky?
I didn't call them yet. Maybe we should do that like
yeah, I'd love
right
to.
Now.
I'd love to. I want to hear how Becky did in the rain at NOLA. I heard you did well.
Do you have headphones?
Yeah.
I brought some as well. We got to plug you in okay, because you won't be able to hear the conversation.
You got a small USB or a small
yeah,
headset
I got
jack?
It. Okay. The gap from 2 to 3, Shaky Dog is 37.25 and Super K is 37.60.
It's pretty close.
So 35 points.
Still pretty close.
That could change on a wet skid pad easy.
Right, right.
Or any event where Super K has a mechanical where they finish yeah. P15.
Right. Or DNF it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
if you DNF, do you is it yours not disqualified, you just lose the
you get
potential.
Zero.
Yeah, you lose the potential to have those points, right?
Yep. And so if you DNF in an event with 360 points possible, getting zero
is hard.
If your competition is getting 30, you know, 360,
right,
is that's
changes
bad.
Everything. Yeah. Changes everything. Interesting.
So, tight race for sure for P2 through 5. I think.
Okay. Did you message Scott at all? Or?
You should do that right now. The
I can call him real quick.
The GT500 team is 35-20, so 100 point gap. So it looks like practically people are just battling for the podium.
Yeah.
Good battle for fifth place between Chris Mayfield and Andy Hollis.
Hey, hold on just a second, okay?
Yeah. How's this sound? Probably not great.
Probably not great.
Hold on.
Plus, if I talk, he can't hear me.
Right, right. I'm just going to tell him. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Do you have the ability to talk in a few minutes or no?
Yeah.
Or
like an hour drive to our passage control.
Okay. How's this look on the levels, Abe? Hey, Scott, keep talking.
Okay. I'm talking. Talking yeah. loudly.
Can you hear it or no? You want to pipe him in, regular or no?
We're
at the track. We're trying to figure out the best way to record you. Hang on a minute.
I gotcha.
You want to call him back or no?
Yeah, let's call
All right, we'll call you right back.
All right, bye.
All right. You still recording? You can. Keep it on. We're
figuring some stuff out here. Be right back. Welcome back to day 5 of the one lap coverage on the Slip Angle podcast. This morning we did a show with Alex Moss in Super K, and that's the first time we've had a chance to talk to him this week because his car is very loud and obnoxious. We've got another competitor, Scott Robertson, and Becky Burton, who've been on the show before this week as well, but their car is also loud and obnoxious. And the last time that we talked to you, you had made the decision to drive to Oklahoma to pick up some wheel bearings or hubs or something. What all has happened since then? Because that seems like forever ago.
Yeah, things have happened. Good and sideways, but this has been a really hard week. I think the last time we said it, Mickey, at the quote that don't bring a race car to the one lap, and only on Tuesday did we realize that we were those people.
Yeah, you are. You're the most yeah. race car on the besides Super K, maybe. Like, I think you actually yeah. are more race car than they are. But
we're right in there.
They definitely have a side exit fender exhaust, but other than that, yeah. they have carpet. But yeah,
you have carpet and a dash.
Right,
so good for them. So after we made the team decision to drive an extra 2 hours to get the wheel bearing and front hub from Christopher Lewis's race car and Robert Thorne's race car. They actually took it off their car that was at their shop and had it waiting for us. Next morning, I know, it's the best people. We went to Eagles Canyon. We got it installed, and it was delightful. Don't have to worry about that or even think about it anymore. And we filled up the tank before we went in with 91 octane because it's Texas. And totally didn't think that the track would have race gas. So first session out, we're definitely down on power. And the track was low on grip, I would say. Our car wanted to push everywhere. But we had a good performance in the pack. We actually placed 32nd for a track that still likes power. And
your first time there.
Yeah, first time there. And we started having the conversation that we do still think that we're the lowest horsepower car in the paddock.
Really?
Yeah. Which is crazy because we doubled our horsepower from the VP.
Can you imagine if you still had the 1.8?
It's so slow. It's so slow.
Yeah.
But Eagles Canyon is great. I mean, ton of elevation. A lot of tricky local knowledge would help you go really fast there.
Yeah, Chris Sullivan said it was gorgeous, too. And, like, fun. Really nice place.
And they also have these fabric covering grid that Jim Trevitt needs to get on board with.
Oh, yeah.
It was amazing to be able to park in the shade before you went out.
That would be nice.
So, car did great first time out. Becky nailed the tire pressures. So, we were having high and low speed push. So, we sniffed the rear sway bar and took out our gurneys. All the gurneys on our wing and went out. It definitely helped, and we were able to go faster in the afternoon, which sometimes can be really hard because the track gets really hot and crazy. But we went faster and were able to place 30th in that one.
Wow.
We were pretty excited to have that really good day after a day of, after many days of nonsense.
Yeah, stress and nonsense.
Yeah. Trying to think if anything happened after that. I don't even know what the day is. Okay, there we go. So we go from day four and day five are when you really like lose track of who you are and where you are in the country. So we went from Eagles Canyon in Texas to New Orleans, Louisiana. Just a long drive. No real. All the roads. That's right. Becky reminded me. Roads in Louisiana suck.
They're built on swamps, just like NOLA.
They're terrible.
Yeah.
And in our car, like the transit, you just can't rest very well.
No.
The transits are work. It's hot. It's loud. It's uncomfortable. It's just. It's really hard to even go to sleep. But we got in, we saddled up for NOLA, which was Becky's event. So real quick, we're going to swap headphones, and I'm going to let her tell her own story.
Nice.
I just played crew chief this time, and she just, I played crew chief, and she got to play driver. So hold on a hot second.
Hello.
Hey, Becky.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you're. Are you driving right now, or is Scott?
Scott's driving.
Oh, okay. Yeah, how was NOLA? You sound like you had a wet track to begin with.
Yeah, it looked like it was going to be dry, but then a big thunderstorm rolled in right when like the middle of the field was going. They actually had to stop everything for about half an hour and restarted the session once it stopped thunder and lightning. So some of the middle of the pack got a really wet track, but then the sunshine came out and it started to dry out. So by the time that I went out, the surface was dry, but there were just a lot of puddles, big puddles.
Yeah, that place holds puddles for like days.
Yeah. So I was a little nervous about that, but I got some good advice from Tom about what the red line was probably going to be like, and just went out there anyway. I found some people that I felt comfortable going in their run group that have been really encouraging for me. So this is my first time actually competing on a track in the one lap. And I passed the Corvette. So that was pretty fun. And I think I did pretty well. I think I placed 51st. And then afternoon was completely dry, and it turns out everybody's a lot faster in the dry. So I didn't do so great in the morning. I was just kind of lost in the gearing. Didn't know what gear I was in or what gear I was going to. So I only finished ahead of a few people in the afternoon, but really just glad that I took the opportunity and was able to drive in one lap. It's kind of a big...
Well, it's such a different challenge than like going to a track day or even competing in a time attack. That high stakes environment of the standing start and the three hot laps and they all count is an experience.
Yeah, definitely not a lot of time to get comfortable with the track. Fortunately, I had driven a session when we were there for Grid Life in November, so I had a little bit of driving at the track, but I just don't have much seat time in general, so it's very intimidating for me. That's something that I really wanted to do in the Miata. Or it becomes not a one-lap car anymore.
It's a fast track, too, and real flowing, but pretty fun to drive. So at least you got to have a good time. That was a good choice, I think, for track.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Are you driving at Gingerman also, or no?
Yep, I'll be driving at Gingerman. So
nice, nice. And you've
looking
got...
Looking forward to that. I'm a little uncomfortable with that track.
With Gingerman?
Yeah.
All you got to remember to do is not go in the grass. Just keep it on the blacktop. You'll be fine.
Yeah, no big deal.
No big deal. Well, we're here right now, actually. We got a track day going on, and it feels like home, so at least you'll be home a little bit, right?
Yeah, we'll be comfortable to be there.
Right. How was the drive from NOLA to that was NOLA to Atlanta, right?
Yeah, that was a long drive to begin with. We had our passage control at Tommy's Express, so we were looking forward to that. You know, they're one of our big sponsors, so it was good to see everybody there and see all the cars going through the wash. And they took really good care of us there. So I added a lot of time to our transit. We stopped before we even got there. One of the STIs blew up in the transit. We stopped to check on them.
It sounds like a Subaru problem.
Yeah.
Right before we started this podcast today, Subaru blew up on track.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a thing.
We stopped to check in on them. Then we were at the last car to leave the Tommy's Express. And then this huge storm rolled in, like tornado warning. Terrible. The radar was like dark red. So we had to, we're trying to make time on that as much as we could, but we had to pull over our air intake filter and soak with water. We had to do a little bit of modifying to get that in a different spot where we could keep going.
Jeez.
So that was an adventure. We didn't get in until about 4 a.m.
Yeah, Scott and I were texting late last night, and I was hearing the harrowing tales of the weather and your drive. It didn't seem like the best one, but...
Yeah, it's one of those things that's part of the one lap. You never know what's going to happen, whether it's something with your car or something crazy like that. It's just everybody goes through it.
Yeah. Are you looking forward to Mooncake, the Mazda 2, next year?
Yes. Very much so.
I'll bet you are.
We love the Miata, but we're looking forward to that.
Think of how relaxed you'll be when you get to the track, right?
Yeah, we won't have anything to do.
Yeah, well, unless that starts breaking. Everything can break.
Yeah.
How was AMP today?
Well, I'll pass you back over to Scott. I'll let him talk about that.
Cool.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, man. You drove AMP today?
That track, I'm not going to earn your explicit rating for you, but that track, my favorite track I've ever driven, hands down.
Dude, I drove it one day, and it was like, I daydream about that track at least once a week.
So good.
It's a GLTC. Like, GLTC cars are the fastest I'd want to go there. Because, like,
yes.
It's such a gnarly place, man. It's so good.
Yeah, and I think that's part of why we did so well there this morning. I know Tom was struggling to get the power down there because there aren't really straightaways. It's all turning.
Right. It's a machine gun. It's like an autocross course up about 30 miles an hour. So.
Yeah, and the elevation is huge.
Yeah.
I mean,
so, Adam,
Pallet, but with tons more elevation and right. better put together with better. It was and awesome.
The dip before the last big sweeper, you know? Oh, it's so good, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I moved the apex sign that they have there a little bit.
Yeah.
I turned it just a little early, but it's one of those things that the Toyota team who tested their lot, they're like, really fine. As long as you hit the apex, you're fine. And I didn't want to open up the wheel, so I just kept it and it was moved just a little bit next lap around, but it's fine.
So, Adam, you drove at Shenandoah, I think, when we were there a couple of years ago. How does Shenandoah compare to AMP? Because they're both kind of autocross-like.
I need to know this.
AMP is... It's like a machine gun autocross, but it flows together really well.
Yeah.
Shenandoah doesn't flow together really well. Like,
sure.
It's like a bunch of cool turns from a bunch of tracks around the world that like somebody jigsaw puzzled into one track, and they're like, that kind of works. But AMP, a lot of turning, like not that hard on brakes, but you need to have enough. And like only like what, three hard braking zones?
Only two that I can think of.
Yeah, like two and a half maybe. I was probably over slowing someplace else, but dude, it's so fun. And the big sweeper, like,
oh, so good.
It's so good.
And as long as I could hit that right, I mean, that was flat.
Oh yeah, it was so great. That place is just a hoot in a car like
that. We did almost see one of the GT500s driven by a professional race car driver almost red flag his first hot lap.
Really?
Coming onto that main front straightaway, if you want to call it that, in front of pits.
Right.
Got all four off onto that extra bit that they put on there.
Oh, wow.
Bring it back on track sideways. Tank slapped the other way, brought it back just in time to hit the brakes.
Jeez.
We all were pretty confident that car was going to be pinned.
Yeah,
and that
wall's right there, too.
Terrifying, but yeah, I mean, it was fine. So.
That's good. All's well that ends well, I guess.
Yeah. So we finished 23rd.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Yeah, we finished 23rd this morning, and knew where there was more time, and I'm actually I don't want to stir controversy. I'm just irritated because I really wanted to run that track again, and it really favored our car.
Right.
But there were quite a few cars that were not within even one lap standards for how noisy your car should be.
Right.
And so they were blowing sound all morning.
Right.
And the staff talked to Brock about it. He said the staff actually was way nicer than they could have been, and they let us finish the full morning session.
And then they told you to GTFO?
Well, apparently they were considering letting us run the afternoon, but Brock wanted to keep the relationship good.
Right.
Because they were going to get fined for what happened that morning.
It was that loud. Huh?
Yeah. And it was overcast. I mean, everything was. We've got some loud cars on this.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, everything was against you, huh?
Yeah.
Well, it kind of sucks that your car was really good there and you couldn't run again. But, man, at least you got to experience that track. This track is so cool, dude.
It is so good.
And it's gorgeous, too.
Yeah. It's like Blackhawk scenery with rolling hills.
Right.
And a track that's just really, I don't know, I just love it. I
really enjoy that place. So.
And the food truck was good, too.
Now you're heading to what, Linear?
Just got done there, actually.
Oh, really? How'd you do there?
Hilarious good fun. I'm really glad the One Lap brought back an event like this that you can't really prepare for. Like, the cars that are on the One Lap, they can't really go to their local oval and just do testing. Because that's not something that these cars do.
Right.
So it's a heavily banked 3/8 mile paved oval. And where you enter is ground level and the track is dug into the ground. And it's about a 30-foot drop to the middle.
Oh yeah, it's deep down there. We used to go look at it when we were there for Road Atlanta because it's right across the street.
So. Yeah, and that's where Chris went. Chris went all the way to the inside to get pictures.
Yeah, that's a good spot.
And we're good buddies with the Toyota manufacturing engineers, and a lot of them have run dirt in the past, so they gave us some setup advice. And we ended up 26.
Nice.
I think 26 of that. And basically, found out you don't have to brake in a Miata. You just lift, you let gravity and the banking do the work.
Nice.
I mean, it's creepy because, like, there's stuff to hit there, so.
Oh, yeah, there's like a wall everywhere around the outside.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, the closing speed when you're coming up to it, I mean, you're going into it 20, 30 miles an hour at least. It's an experience. So basically, they let us do a grudge match style where we could just point to somebody and run with them. They only let two cars out at a time. So I pointed to Toyota's 8.6 because, you know, we're both small, rear-wheel drive, aero. So I know we got him, but yeah, nailed the setup and onto passage control where we will stop for the briefest of moments and then soldier on to Summit Point.
You're on Summit Point, Maine, right?
Yeah, Summit Point morning and afternoon. Brock, the last time they went there and did Shenandoah, they wadded up a few cars and he doesn't want to do that again.
Yeah, Shenandoah is gnarly. Gnarly, gnarly. Yeah. So go take a look at it, though, when you're there, if you can.
Yeah, I definitely want to. Chris wants to shoot some rollers while we're around that area.
Right.
Well, we don't want to keep you too long, but it's been great hearing how things have been going, and it's always good to hear from you, and we hope that you have a very safe trip on your way up to Summit Point.
Thank you. We hope that, too. It's just... I want to thank everybody again for just like all the messages and support. And this by far has been our hardest one lap, the issues and everything leading up to it. And the car itself has really performed well, and it's been necessary and just really encouraging. So thank you, everybody.
Love it, man. Real proud of you guys that you did it. And you're doing it. So
yeah, we're proud, and we're gonna sleep for like a week when we get back.
Oh, it's gonna be the best.
Yeah.
I'm tired for you. That's how wimpy I am.
I don't think my body's realized the way I described how much sleep we got last night is when I got back in the car and started it up, the coolant and the oil temperature were not down to ambient yet.
Yeah, so, well, that's not much.
Go. Nope.
How long is your drive tonight?
A great question.
Seems like it's a hike.
Yeah, it's something like 6 hours from the passage control.
That's so dumb.
So really, we've got our media team behind us, Chris Sullivan and Steve Secor, and they're their big, comfy, air-conditioned Yukon. But yeah, we're gonna be making some tracks tonight. If we get in before midnight, that would be fantastic. That basically gets us 6 hours,
right?
Which is huge.
Well, if you're falling asleep, give us a call. Maybe we'll be awake. We'll do a podcast while you fall asleep.
Yeah, I might need to do that.
Yeah, don't drive tired, man.
No, we tried to do a good job of switching off and trusting that the driver, if they need to switch, that they will speak up. That was one of the best pieces of advice we got from Brock our first year, is trust your driver. And driver, you have to know what you need, because if you're driving tired, you're scary. Yeah. Your pastor's not going to sleep, and they're going to be tired.
Right.
Well, we gotta trust each other.
This is like old hat for you guys now, 3 years in. So.
Yeah, it's hardest year yet, and I'm looking forward to that cruise control, air condition, quiet V-spec life next year.
Oh, it's gonna be so delightful, dude.
I don't think we're gonna know what to do with ourselves.
Well, thanks a lot for being on the show. Drive safe, and we'll talk to you soon.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.
So that wraps up coverage from One Lap of America, day five.
That's a lot of days.
Got Adam on the show today, but I had to meet him in person in order to be able to do it.
It's been a busy couple of days. Come on.
We hope that you guys are enjoying this and are learning about One Lap if you haven't heard of it already. Both Adam and I think it's an extraordinary event, and
it makes me tired just hearing these stories, dude. Like, so tired.
It's an amazing experience.
I believe it.
And you know, that's coming from people that run an event or right. run a series of events,
run even. Wild events too.
It's just something so unique and so completely different that if you're on track and you like to drive, if you're not thinking about doing One Lap, I think you definitely should.
Yeah. I kind of want to do it in an RV chasing friends in a race car.
That also sounds fun.
That's kind of sound fun.
But we want to thank the Patreons and for their continued support. You guys have been amazing. And to thank the folks at FCP Euro, where every part you buy is guaranteed for life.
Mm-hmm.
And some of our racers use regularly. I think even Scott Robertson uses FCP Euro
parts. He's gotten a couple of drive-by-wire throttle bodies, he said.
And then finally, by Apex Pro. Yeah. We're going to be releasing some content with them, I think, very soon, that talks about some improved hardware and things that they're working on and really awesome new features right. in the software and hardware. So we love those guys, and I
really
used
cool
the Apex
company.
Pro tier today.
Yep, so did I. So rad companies to work with. We love that they want to hang out with us and want us to talk about them, and we only talk about them because we think they are good. So thanks, everybody.
Slip Angle was created by Austin Cabot and Adam Jabe, co-hosted by Derek Yarbrough, and production by Abram Schmucker, who mixes all of our terrible audio. If you like the show, please rate us and review us on iTunes, and come and find us in the pits at A Grid Live to say hello.